Today, the elephants in the room of property prices. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Home prices are driven by a combination of demand, where population growth, thanks to high migration, puts upward pressure on prices. Supply, where more property for sale puts downward pressure on prices, and availability of credit is the catalyst for transactions to occur. Now, much of the debate is currently centered on supply side issues. As I discussed last week, outgoing Governor Phil Lowe urged governments at all levels to work together to address the problem of housing affordability. Notably, he dismissed rent controls as a short-term fix that would provide immediate relief by reducing the incentive to fix the key problem, which is supply. There aren't short-term solutions here. The solution has to be putting in place a structure that makes the supply side of the housing market more flexible, and that means zoning and planning deregulation, and it means state and local governments being part of the solution. And by the way, it also means that first-time buyer incentives or rental support just makes the problem worse, something which I've been highlighting over the years and which, by the way, also has been confirmed by recent Productivity Commission reports. Much of the discussion has coalesced around supply-side issues, which are, by the way, driven by state and local council decisions, where not in my backyard is still a thing. The calls for medium-density developments actually often hits speed bumps. For example, the Western Australian government has put on hold plans to boost affordable median density housing following developer complaints that requirements to provide green space and reduce energy consumption would inflate costs. Days ahead of a national cabinet meeting aimed to tackle the country's chronic housing shortage and affordability problems, WA's deferral of residential planning codes follows a similar decision by the former New South Wales coalition government back in 2018. Builders and developers are struggling with soaring costs and falling demand due to higher borrowing costs, and the code that was to start next month would have made that harder. The Property Council of Australia and the Housing Industry Association warned that it would have pushed prices up. But continuing the status quo means the largest players would still fail to meet the housing needs of a changing society, said Kate Fitzgerald, an architect and medium density developer. The issue Australia faces is that if you don't allow innovation and you don't allow choice and diversity and you don't encourage incentives because you're trying to protect certain players in the industry, you're not going to get anywhere, she said. The current players are not meeting demand. Planning Minister John Carey said he deferred changes that would have cut homes' energy consumption with better sun access and ventilation requirements and left less of a site covered by impermeable surfaces such as driveways to keep the cost of delivering housing lower. The WA changes also cut homes in areas zoned for townhouses, those falling under WA's residential R codes 30 and 40 from the planning new code, meaning the new design rules, once gazetted, would apply to a smaller area of medium density homes. It's a substantial reduction in where those codes will apply, said Ryan Keyes, the Perth Director of Planning Consultancy, MECON. Rob Stokes, the former New South Wales Planning Minister, whose own plans for a fast-track medium density housing code were scuppered by his own cabinet colleagues and successors, said the failure to decarbonise housing was baking in a higher carbon future, because less efficient homes and their higher running costs would be in place for decades. You've got to build more sustainably when that's the hardest one to get moving on, Mr. Stokes said. Australia is forging ahead in decarbonising energy, transport and infrastructure, yet it seems virtually impossible to get traction in decarbonising our home sector. Mr. Carey said good design was an unaffordable luxury in the current market. I believe in density done well and good design. However, as a respected WA architect pointed out, good design is merely an academic exercise if it can't be viably delivered in the current market, he said. Now, of course, migration is a federal government policy, And as I've discussed many times before, the current ultra-high targets are putting huge pressures on local infrastructure as well as driving prices higher. The 2021 Intergenerational Report projected that Australia would add 13.1 million people, that's a 50% increase, over the next 40 years, driven by net overseas migration of around 235,000 people per year. The 2023 federal budget then increased the net overseas migration population to a record high of 400,000 in 2022-23, 315,000 in 23-24, and then 260,000 from 2024-25 onwards, i.e. that's 25,000 higher than the IGR projected. So accordingly, Australia's population is now set to grow even faster than the 13.1 million increase projected in the 2021 IGR. The additional 13.1 million people that was there in the IGR, let alone the higher numbers from the federal budget, would demand the construction of around 5 million additional dwellings as well as considerable new infrastructure. This construction would drive up Australia's carbon emissions, as would the extra 13.1 million energy users and consumers. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese on Wednesday flagged that he would use the upcoming National Cabinet meeting in Brisbane to get the states to commit to planning laws that would make it easier to build 1 million homes over 5 years from 2024, as announced in that federal budget. At the same time, as Labor is seeking to boost housing construction, it continues to push on with its election commitment to lower Australia's carbon emissions by 43% by 2030 relative to 2005, as part of a transition to net zero emissions by 2050. Now, you've got to ask, how can Australia realistically lower its carbon emissions by 43% when the federal government plans to grow Australia's population by around 3 million people by 2030 and build more than 1 million homes? Concrete, an essential input into housing and other construction, accounts for around 8% of the world's carbon emissions. And it's said that if concrete were a nation, it would be the world's third largest emitter behind China and the US. Building construction, operation and maintenance are estimated to account for roughly one quarter of Australia's greenhouse gas emissions. But, and here's the big one, it is the credit supply which is the biggest elephant in the room, as household leverage, especially from recent borrowers, has facilitated the price boom over the past 30 years. Now, those watching this channel will know that I sensitise my models for credit availability, and that this is by far the most significant element, nay elephant, in the room. After deregulation of the financial system in the 1990s, mortgage securitization, which enabled new players to enter into the market, an increase in income multiples from 2.5 times income to 8 times for some borrowers now, and of course the whole low rate cycle where borrowing power was increased, all of those factors lifted prices, expanded banks' balance sheets and profits, and have now left us with the largest footprint of mortgage stress ever seen and world record debt. Lowe actually celebrated this increase last Friday, referring to the wealth that was created and the bank profits that expanded. And of course, as he faced Parliament for the final time on Friday, outgoing Bank Governor Phil Lowe was remarkably sanguine about the ability of borrowers shifting off cheap fixed-rate mortgages to much more expensive variable-rate loans to make the transition. About 1 million have shifted so far, and another 1 million will shift over the next 12 months, with a peak coming this month and next, he said. But Lowe described this as the most telegraphed rate increase in living memory, and said evidence from inside the major banks suggests those borrowers are keeping up with their new loans and maintaining spending levels. He's watching the remaining cohort of refinance closely, but so far the RBA is seeing nothing frightening. That's because they don't look very hard. Of course, the reason is that households are diverting more of their spending to pay for their housing, and so have less to spend on other things, one reason why the economy is slowing. Now, this credit-driven edifice has left the banks with a high proportion of lending for housing, around 65% of their lending, with less than one third to businesses. Years ago, that was reversed, with more credit flowing to productive businesses, and the artificially high home prices are a result. As a result, financial stability is at risk if home prices correct to some more realistic levels, which, by the way, are on average around 40% below where they currently are. Now, my fear is that this undiffused credit bomb will be skirted around, and as the supply-side elephant is paraded through the streets, the critical question, which is the credit elephant in the room, will be not addressed at all. And because the credit elephant is not going to be addressed, that's a major problem. It should be, because even if it shrinks bank balance sheets and profits, it is a fundamental issue that needs to be tackled to ultimately get housing affordability back to where it needs to be. Because fundamentally at the moment, prices are completely out of whack with incomes. And if you look across the generations, you can see that younger people are much less able to access the market. Now, I'm not saying that supply side issues aren't important and we probably need to build more affordable properties. And I also believe that we should be dialing back migration, because the migration lever, as it's being pulled at the moment, is frankly just shameful. But unless the credit issue is addressed, and unless we get back to a more realistic balance of income to credit and debt servicing, then home prices are going to continue to spiral away from us. And whilst that supports the banks and the banking system, and by the way, the profits of the banks, of course, flow back into taxes paid to the government, this is not a good look into the future. We have to defuse the credit bomb. We have to address the credit elephant in the room. But of all the elephants that are parading at the moment, this is the most intractable, the most difficult, and yet the most critical to address. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.